broadcasting live from the Toyota studios.
Just a bit outside. He tried the corner and missed.
On your favorite Arkansas sports talk station.
Oh, man. Radio?
Yes, talk radio.
So boring, man.
Okay.
Streaming live from
HitThatLine.com. I got that wood.
This.
Y'all better put him in the Heisman.
Is.
Smile.
The Morning Rush.
In my role, cause I wanna get it on till I die. In my role, cause I wanna get it on till I die. Get it on till I die. Get it on till I die. Y'all remember me. Y'all remember me.
With John Neighbors.
Kentucky fans are so classy that they take the dishes out of the sink before they pee in it.
Tommy Kraft.
Tavita, Tualaka Ogno, Tualapa Opano, Mosesetamo, Bahi Oho, Bihokeo, Balai Tutuo. I think I nailed it.
And Nick Mason.
I'm going to invite all my closest friends to play golf, and Tommy Kraft, John Neighbors are not part of that group.
The Morning Rush starts right now.
Toyota Tuesday on the Morning Rush. Neighbors on vacation this week. SEC Media Days is next week. Nick Mason's in Georgia. Tyler Wilson's here. Former Razorback NFL free agent Brett Gutis here. I'm Tommy Kraft. Glad you're along. Talking expectations for the 2018 year, but not so much wins and losses. We'll get to that. Plenty of people are spewing win-loss totals, and we're gonna do plenty of spewing and nonsense on that stuff at some point. But we're just talking about some things that have to happen in year one for Chad Morris. And what you expect of him as your head coach is what we've been discussing here throughout the morning. We'll continue to do that. It's either that, folks, or World Cup. What do you want? It's either that or Wimbledon. What do you want? So we're talking quarterbacks this morning. I'm not talking Wimbledon.
You don't want to talk about Serena's high ranking?
I do not.
Well,
or what was it, Manic Monday yesterday? They had all the men's matches. Yeah. Ashamed I even know that.
Mm-hmm. You had it on, didn't you?
Had Sports Center on, so they let me know that. Yeah. So
got the Open Championship coming up.
Got the Open coming up. Tiger. We didn't get your thoughts yesterday. You weren't with us yesterday. Tiger versus Phil for $10 million. I know you're all in
exhibition.
On this.
Exhibition. Depends on where we play it. Exhibition. Is that what you're talking about?
Right. I mean, this is going to happen. This is in the works right now. Now, I'm of the belief that this would be far more interesting, at least if we had the belief this was their money. Like, they're putting up $5 million apiece, winner take all.
This is Bobby Jones, Walter Hagen, 2.0, right?
Right?
Mm-hmm. I mean, that's what you're trying to create. And think about it. Every storyline that we have, it doesn't matter what week it is, if it's the Quicken Loans tournament or if it's the Open Championship or if it's Augusta. You know what the storylines are on Golf Channel? Tiger, Phil, how do they do it? I mean, it's overwhelmingly the conversation right now. And you've got really good players. You got Brooks Koepka, but you got Dustin Johnson. You got Rory McIlroy. You got Spieth. You got Justin Thomas,
yeah.
Right? But
yawn.
Everybody's just going ho-hum. Mm-hmm. It's Tiger and it's Phil. And if it doesn't matter what they shoot, it's the highlighted, like, you know, right now everybody's talking about the Ryder Cup, right? And then there's the line, there's the top 10 players, and there's a line, and it's Tiger and Phil is the alternate. And can they get inside the top 10? You know, there's, you know, that's the conversation. So yeah, why not do an exhibition? That's what everybody cares about anyway.
Yeah, this has been a conversation that came up with the U.S. Open, and now it's gotten some legs, and I just want to get your thoughts on it because obviously golf tries its best to get mainstream. Tiger brought it mainstream, and when Tiger had his issues, golf has kind of slipped back into the niche category. And Tiger versus Phil, primetime TV, grudge match for $10 million. I mean, Nick, you were talking about this yesterday. You're not a golf fan, but you're watching this. I mean,
yeah,
I just wish they'd do it like
I'm
you
for
do.
Sure watching it.
You know, play it like you would at the weekend club. I mean, you know, press when you're down. Well, yeah, let's just do it like we would at the golf course here. You know,
mm-hmm. Beer a hole.
Yeah, exactly. What, you know, have your own club rules. Whatever you got to do.
You know, a lot of times, and this is what we're seeing, I think, with all sports. It doesn't. You don't even have to watch the best players. You don't even have to watch the most elite of the sport play to be excited and compelled mm-hmm. about it. Like, it's not about, like, we don't have to watch the two best boxers. Like, we don't have to, but the two biggest names makes sense. That's why you go Conor McGregor and I don't even remember the other guy. I mean, I'm off, but that's why McGregor's fighting. That's why Pacquiao and those guys are doing what they're doing. It's not about the two best boxers. It's about the two biggest names that people have interest in watching.
But because we're programmed, there's something in our DNA.
Mayweather, by the way. Yeah.
There's something in our DNA about one-on-one competition, mano a mano. And I think that's why boxing was so popular. That's why UFC has been so popular. That's why if you're allowed to watch football practice, the Oklahoma drill is maybe the most entertaining part, right? And who was it? The Florida coach? One of them started their spring game and gave the ball to the team that could win the Oklahoma drill. I wish they'd start every game. Forget the coin toss. Send out your best guy. You send out your best guy. We're going to do an Oklahoma drill at the 50. Everybody would be in their seat for that.
That's XFL.
And XFL did that. Exactly. I mean, there's something in our DNA. We were talking yesterday, if you could get KD and LeBron to do a one-on-one, you know, how you know, we're just talking about exhibition matches with this Tiger. There's just something in our DNA as sports fans, as Americans, that we love one-on-one competition. And, you know, I don't think, regardless of sport, and I think, you know, we talk about this quarterback stuff. That's why we love quarterback battles. It's kind of one-on-one competition to see who's going to win these jobs.
That's the perfect segment. I mean, that's where we started this conversation. We got into Tiger Field golf and boxing, but coming right back to the quarterback. That's why we.
I'm better than you. You say you're better than me. Let's go head to head and find out here. You know, we love that stuff. It's just who we are. So yeah, that circles us back to this quarterback stuff this year. And We've been talking about expectations. I want to talk about quarterback development because they're going to have to develop each and every quarterback on this roster because they've been either brought in and then reprogrammed to run pro style. Now they're going to have to be retrained and reprogrammed through, and that's what they've been doing during the spring. We've seen that with Cole Kelly. I found it interesting last year at the end of the year, Enos and Bielema went to some spread and some tempo just trying to save their bacon a little bit and trying to make an offense work with what they had. You got Ty Story, who comes from a background of that, and then you're bringing in Connor Nolan into the mix and some other recruits into the mix. Tyler, this isn't going to just be a one-on-one competition. I think there's how many guys do you actually believe are going to be in the mix at some point to start a game this year?
Three guys.
At Arkansas.
Yeah, I think three guys. I think it's the names that everybody knows. It's right now Ty Story, who was your starter for the spring game, probably the guy that is most suited to run on campus. Obviously Connor's on campus now, but the guy that in the spring was on campus and a part of all those off-season drills, Ty Story was the most equipped to be your starting quarterback. Cole Kelly has some limitations to his mobility. He serves a purpose in short yardage because of the size and, you know, the physicality that he brings to the table, but, you know, lacks the ability to turn the quarter and get 10 or 15 yards. You know, when you're reading defensive ends and linebackers on some of the zone read stuff from the shotgun position. Connor Nolan he's the best of both worlds. He gives you the speed. He gives you the flexibility. He gives you the mobility. He has the arm. I think long term, you're looking at the Connor Nolan kid is maybe this is the guy. And, you know, it's a matter of, well, how quick do you insert him into the equation? How quickly do you insert him into the competition? Maybe it's immediately, or maybe you do it organically and naturally over a, you know, I think maybe a 3-month period here. You get him on campus roughly a month ago, so he's had a month and a half maybe to digest the system at this point. But you're going through the 7-on-7 drills. Typically that's the first form of the development is, yeah, we're not going to put you in pads day one, but right now we're going through 7-on-7. You put your shirt and your shorts on, and we start throwing routes on air. And typically that's just me and our wide receivers, and we're going over our routes. And then your development beyond that goes to 7-on-7. So now you're actually facing an opponent, which is your defense, in a schematic design in the setting. We actually put the routes we had on air now against a defense, and then you take it one step further, and now you're implementing your offense and defensive lines to the equation. And, you know, so that process is what he's going through right now, and There's no question. The other guys have a slight advantage, but I think that's the biggest question is to see what Chad Morris's plan is for Connor Nolan. It was 4 or 5 months ago now that we were talking on air about him potentially being a major league draft pick and being involved in the draft that happened a month ago. He obviously put his name in the hat of guys. I'm not interested. I want to be a Razorback. My gut tells me you don't make that call. You don't make that decision if you don't think you're going to be and have the opportunity to come in and compete immediately. So my thought is there's no question he's going to get his opportunity early and often.
I agree with you. Two or three quarterbacks are probably going to play, but what do you think is it week one, two, or three that he feels like, that I'm talking about Chad, that feels like needs to name a starter just to kind of circle around him?
You know, that's interesting. I don't know if you name a starter until game week. I think this probably remains an open competition, would be my guess. I mean, there's different philosophies. You could go the Steve Spurrier route. You could go the Petrino never named a starter until nearly the first week of camp. It kind of depended on the situation, but oftentimes didn't name them even up until the first game. And, you know, would say, well, Ryan's going to be the starter, but Tyler's going to come in the first series of the second quarter, and he's going to start. There was never really it was always a fluid situation. And I think he did that to always create the competition behind, you know, who's going to get playing time and how are we going to do that and keep guys, you know, on needles. I thought that strategy worked relatively well. I think you probably see something similar to that here with those three names.
Who does Connor start for first, Chad Morris or Dave Van Horn?
Well, he's going to have a chance earlier.
I understand who he's got a chance for earlier.
I think he probably, the answer to that is Chad Morris.
Okay.
Would be my guess.
So a true freshman start.
At some point in the season.
Because I believe he will start a baseball game in his first year.
Well, you got a lot of baseball games,
a lot of midweek games. You got a whole staff to rebuild.
That's
so,
right.
So I believe he'll certainly have a chance there. So you think he will get a start in the 2018 season?
If I have to throw some cash on the table right now, say who's going to at some point, I see him starting a football game this season. Absolutely.
All right. 12 after the hour. It's a Toyota Tuesday. Any Garth Brooks fans here on the show?
Love them.
All right. We'll talk some Garth Brooks and a venue he'll play. Talk about that next. That's sports related. We'll do that next on The Morning Rush.
This is Toyota Tuesday on The Morning Rush. Get by your local Toyota dealer for a test drive today. Toyota, let's go places. The Morning Rush podcast is brought to you by Bud Light. Stock up with Bud Light for game days and check out Budweiser's limited edition Freedom Reserve. This red lager is specially brewed for proud veterans across the country. For every case purchased, Budweiser will donate $1 to Fold of Honor, a nonprofit providing scholarships to families of fallen soldiers. Bud Light, please drink responsibly.
Let me see. I love you like a lyric loves a melody. Baby, completely wrapped up in you. How do I need you?
Razorback videos, articles, and podcasts. Find them all at hitthatline.com. This is The Morning Rush.
Back on The Morning Rush, little Garth Brooks here as we roll back in. You. For all you Garth fans out there, he announced yesterday, and I didn't know this, but Notre Dame Stadium has never had a concert, from what I heard from this announcement. Garth Brooks is going to play the very first concert at Notre Dame. Pretty big icon, pretty big concert, a lot of details and planning still to come out on this thing, but Garth Brooks at Notre Dame, it's a pretty big deal. And I imagine the show, they ain't even announced a date and all this stuff yet. It's probably already sold out. StubHub's probably already got all the tickets, and now you can go buy them for $1,200 a piece or whatever. But made me think, and then there was a lot of questions that went to Garth on Facebook and stuff. because he was pretty vague and pretty elusive about some things, but this is going to be the first of a series of concerts, not necessarily a tour, but a series where it leading you to believe he's going to play some of these iconic sports venues around the country. So I wanted to ask the question while we had a few moments. If you could go
What venues?
Yeah, what venues would you like to go see? Right. And I'm not talking AT&T Stadium in Arlington. Everybody, I mean, there's shows there all the time. That's not an iconic spot. I'm talking like Wrigley Field. I'm talking like Notre Dame. The Big House was brought up in some questions to him. Where would be the one place you would like to go see a concert at, and who would you like to see in that venue?
Places where the bricks could tell you something.
Right.
If the bricks could talk, and that's what you see with Wrigley Field, right? It's the brick, mm-hmm. you know, the brick outfield wall and the ivy and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Boston, the Green Monster,
right.
One of them. Yeah, I mean, might as well. I mean,
we've listed probably all the, you know, not all the really good ones. Think about you played for the Packers. Lambeau Field. How cool would it be to see one of your favorite artists at Lambeau Field? I'm sure.
I missed one by a couple of days. I missed Kenny Chesney in there.
That'd be awesome.
So, and they had a blast.
You know, if you play in Boston, my guess is the encore, probably Sweet Caroline, right?
Absolutely.
Would you put that one in the hit list? Probably.
Mm, absolutely.
You know, there's so many, and I think it's an interesting topic, but when you brought it up this morning, I'm going, you know, I think if you're Garth Brooks, you're sitting around, what else is there for you to do? You've played every song there is to play. You've played your stuff 1,000 times. You've played every bar and back, you know, whether that's Stillwater, Oklahoma, or whether it's, you know, Nashville, you've been to every venue. But what are the venues you haven't been to? These sporting events, which American culture loves more than anything mm-hmm. else in the world.
Yeah, you get to marry two of your right. favorite things. That's why I wanted to bring it up. You get to, I mean, we all like music. We all like sports. And a lot of times people think those are exclusive. Well, you like sports, you can't like music. And I have this argument with people all the time that, you know, that somehow our format and what we do here doesn't fit well with certain music concerts and promoting certain things. I'm like, that's crazy. So you're telling me people that like music don't love the Razorbacks? Well, no, of course not. Well, people that love the Razorbacks love music. And I just think that this is a great intersection of two passions that I think our audience probably share, which is music and sports venues. I think it's an awesome intersection.
How about a great picture of looking up at Garth and Touchdown Jesus being right behind him?
Exactly. That's iconic moment. So.
And how many artists have the star power enough to do it in a venue and it not seem, you know, Garth has to do two or three shows. It was in Nashville he was doing a relief effort concert at the Bridgestone Arena, and fantastic concert. But he had to do two or three of them because there were so many people, he can't fit everything in.
Yeah, he's one of those iconic. You know, I've never been to Lambeau. That'd be a cool place to go. I missed a show a few years ago. Zach Brown Band played with James Taylor at Wrigley. I can't think of a better show than to go see those two play together. I think anytime you can go see something in St. Louis, I know the stadium, the old Busch Stadium, they've torn down. But anytime you get something with that arch in the background, I know we're all kind of partial here to Busch Stadium in St. Louis, is pretty cool. Just because of the backdrop. I think if you went out to San Francisco and the ballpark there that overlooks the bay would be pretty cool for a...
Pac Bell. It used to be old Pac Bell.
Pac Bell, whatever it is, else. AT&T, whatever AT&T. It is now.
Pittsburgh Steelers.
Yeah. Some of these old...
Three Rivers.
But I'm with you, like Fenway, Wrigley, Lambeau, Notre Dame, the Big House in Michigan. Those are the places that this could be a great intersection between music and sports. Could be some really cool stuff.
The Morning Rush podcast is brought to you by Bud Light. Stock up with Bud Light for game days and check out Budweiser's limited edition Freedom Reserve. This red lager is specially brewed for proud veterans across the country. For every case purchased, Budweiser will donate $1 to Fold of Honor, a nonprofit providing scholarships to families of fallen soldiers. Bud Light, please drink responsibly.
Right now.
Toyota Tuesday here on the Morning Rush. Check out the Toyota's all-new lineup of 2018 vehicles at your Arkansas Toyota dealer, including the Highlander. Plenty of room for up to 8 people. Toyota, let's go places. John Neighbors on vacation this week. Kraft's here along with Tyler Wilson, Nick Mason, Brett Goods in studio with us. Former Razorback. Been a Green Bay Packer for what, the last 10 years?
10 years.
Current free agent in the NFL, so looking to get a call after the final NFL preseason game.
Yes.
Not hoping for injury with anybody else, but kind of hoping for injury and needing a call following camp.
It's 100% injury rate. So.
Maybe even following the first game of the year. Be a little cooler in mid-September.
Depends on where it's at, yeah. So. You definitely, first game of the year doesn't matter, but, you know, just we want something here pretty soon.
We've been talking expectations for this year and really expectations for Chad Morris, guys, throughout the morning. We asked on Twitter, what would you like to see from Chad Morris in his first year as head coach of the Razorbacks? Pretty open-ended question. We got some great responses. Let's go through some of these on Twitter this morning. Robert says, beat Texas A&M, hold on to win games Hogs are leading in the second half and get 7 wins. That's been something that I think has been a frustration. It's probably a response you could have given the last couple of years, is win games you're winning at halftime. That's been a frustration for Hog fans for a couple of years now. Leading at half and then watching that lead slip away.
Yeah, absolutely. Clock management is going to be key, and Brett did a terrible job at that. And so hopefully Chad can be able to do that, whether it's screens or running the ball to win a game.
Amy says, make Razorback football exciting again and go from I can't watch to I can't wait to see what we do next. Bring a whole new vibe. Cody says, if someone averages more than 8 yards a touch, they touch the ball more than 3 times a game. There's several of these kind of responses in here that, you know, Tyler, there were some people that really felt like player management, roster management, play calling, getting the right players on the field at the right time wasn't always at its best last season.
Yeah.
Particularly at running back.
I think there's some of that. I think the injuries didn't help anything there. But, you know, that's always when you lose football games or when you don't win football games, everybody tends to try to figure out reasons of why, and roster management's probably one of them. You know, one of the things, too, you know, no one mentions – we've said Ty Story once on this radio show, maybe today, twice. And, you know, that was a guy that was totally written off by the previous staff. That was not a useful piece to any kind of puzzle. I don't even know if scout team use was in the equation with the previous staff, and kind of a question mark. And I think with this staff, you see immediate implementation, putting him in. He's getting reps. He's getting opportunities. You know, just a difference in, I think, the mentality and the philosophy there. And, you know, not to say that Ty's, you know, the solve the equation and you know, the complete turnaround, but that's an example of, I think, something that you just brought up there.
Drake says he wants to see a team with discipline that doesn't beat themselves, beat the teams you're supposed to, and maybe steal a game or two. Mm-hmm. So JC writes in, says, beat A&M. JC's got a list here. Beat A&M. Don't be afraid to play your most talented players, no matter what classification they are. I think that goes back to maybe a previous tweet there. Make halftime adjustments and never take his foot off the gas, no matter what the score, and win 7-plus games. I'm going to go back to the halftime adjustment thing, and there's several tweets in here about halftime adjustments. Guys, that was one of the frustrating things for me. It seemed like Arkansas had a decent game plan coming out of the gate many times. It seemed like it got figured out more and more as the season went on. But under Bielema, the ability to go in and out-adjust the adjustments was nil. It was zero. Arkansas got beat in the locker room at halftime each and every time. They're 0-for there. And that's one thing I'm hoping that Arkansas's coaching strategy will vastly improve in, is halftime adjustments. Because Arkansas had no ability to do that prior.
You know, and you can maybe ask 6 different people, get 6 different answers. But if you ask me, and what I've been advocating on is less roster management, but some, and sometimes even less schematic. But when your philosophy, you know, is based on scoring points over the time period of the timetable of a game, right? You're gonna continue to dig yourself in that hole. And you know, the halftime lead might be, or the halftime deficit might be, you know, only 7 points. Well, we're in this football game. Well, you look up at the end of the game, your in-game deficit is 21 points. You're just running a race with an inferior engine. And, you know, that's what, you know, I think sometimes we go, well, it wasn't that bad at halftime. Well, it wasn't that bad at halftime because they just hadn't had they had enough.
They've only had two quarters. Yeah.
That's right. You know, and that's my perception a lot of times of what was going on. Now, right, wrong, or indifferent. That's, you know, now you've got, at least you've got the schematic ability to have the engine to score the points to never be out of the football game.
Well, and so I'm not even at halftime. I am, and this is one of my biggest complaints. When you're paying somebody $4 or $5 million, I need them to have an impact during the game. And whenever you're not calling plays, or whenever it's not, in which I know Chad Morris isn't necessarily calling the plays, but whenever it's not your mind and your plays and you know, and your offense and your scheme, there's only so much that Brett could do in the middle of the game. Like, okay, so if the offense is not scoring in the middle of the game, what's Brett going to do? I mean, he can say, oh, well, let's go hurry up or let's slow it down. But after that, I mean, he couldn't really do anything. If the defense, if you're not stopping anybody, what could he really do? And that's what really probably really got under my skin the most, was not really halftime adjustments, but I didn't feel like he could make in-game adjustments. What? And a lot of that had to do, though, because of his coaching style and how he was the everybody. You just talk about how he's the CEO and he's just hiring everybody else to do it. And I want a head coach that has more of his imprint on the offense or the defense or on something and can make in-game adjustments.
And I think what you're referring there to is I remember playing South Carolina. It's our junior year. We were on a run. And Bielema's, it was Petrino's fed up with a 3rd and 11 call by Willie Robinson. And I remember him calling defense the remainder of that period. I think it was the 3rd or the 4th quarter.
Yeah.
You don't get that with a guy that is a CEO personality.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think that's what the difference, I think, maybe that you're talking about there.
Well, and that was at least the outside perception. And Petrino talked a lot about it in post-game press conferences during in the week when he was available to the media about adjustments he would make at halftime. And he threw Willie under the bus, but he was pretty clear that he would make adjustments on the defensive side of the ball too when needed.
Right.
And it seemed like he was enough of a mechanic, enough of a technician, that in 12 or 15 minutes, and because you don't have a lot of time at halftime, you got 20 minutes or whatever, you've got 10 to 15 minutes to actually make things happen and communicate those changes and make it happen. He was able to make tactical changes on both sides of the ball that were effective. And Arkansas didn't see that under Bielema. Arkansas hadn't seen that under many coaches. And Bielema was able to, or Petrino was able to clearly diagnose the problem and identify the solution and implement it in a short amount of time. And that's just being able to clearly see the problem, see the solution, implement it. And Bielema had, I don't think, could do any one of those three in that amount of time.
Yeah. And you know, I think with Chad, you got a football coach. You've got a guy that was a high school football coach that loved the intricacies of the philosophical and the beliefs of creating things and solving problems and that whole that mental combustion that you have to have. I think that
his math background he talks about.
Yeah. Well, but I mean, you can go that direction if you want, but I think with him, he likes the X's and O's of the game. And if you get him at dinner and you sit down, the conversation's going to be overwhelmed with a schematic reason for why he does what he does. And some people have that personality, and some people would rather talk about, you know, golf or checkers or whatever else. But that's what I think you get.
That's how
with
his
Chad
mind
Morris.
Works. Right. That's just how his mind works. All right, last one here. JT says he wants an admission that he overstated his hiring abilities. He said, I'm going to hire the best defensive coordinator in the country, and proceeds to hire a middle-of-the-pack retread. Then he also wants to see multiple SEC wins, a come-from-behind win, a dominating win, a road win, a great special teams win. Let's go back to the hire of John Chavis. Is this a middle-of-the-pack retread, or is this truly one of the better defensive coordinators in this league? I tend to believe Chavis is going to be one of the better defensive coordinators when he gets time to stock the stable here a little bit. I don't expect to see it in year one, but, guys, I don't think this is a retread. I mean, this guy's resume is far from middle of the pack.
I think I've made this statement on the air before. I don't think it matters with modern football, with everything that's going on offensively. You can go get Matt Patricia from the Patriots, yeah, who
the Lions,
sought after to be, you know, but that's what people recognize and know that name, mm-hmm, from him obviously being under Belichick and the defensive personality. You can go get Kirby Smart. That's fine, but you can get the best mind in football. But with what they're doing on the other side of the ball offensively right now, you're going to get scored on. So, in my opinion, it doesn't matter who you get defensively. Whether you get the next up-and-comer young guy, you get the best guy in football, they're still going to score points on you. And I think, you know, that's the especially at Arkansas, what you've got right now, you're going to be scored on. Now you offensively get to combat that, and essentially your best defensive hire at Arkansas was the fact that you hired Chad Morris. And that's, you know, and not to just be all one-sided here, but I think with Chavis, what you do get is experience. You get a guy that's been in there. You get a guy with Chad Morris with relatively young head coaching experience with a lot of offensive innovation. You get a defensive guy in John Chavis with extreme amount of experience and potential and understanding, been in the league longer than anybody else at the defense coordinator position. So I think you get a little bit of combination with those two names there, with Chad Morris and James.
All right, 12 after the hour, we'll pick up more of the conversation and more of your comments on Twitter. You can hit us up at Morning Rush Show on Twitter. We'll get to that next. This is The Morning Rush.
The most honest sports radio show in Arkansas. The Morning Rush continues next. Spitting the most fire takes you'll ever hear all morning long. This is The Morning Rush.
Time for our Washington Regional Question of the Day, brought to you by Washington Regional Medical Center, committed to providing stroke care. It aligns with the latest research-based treatment guidelines. Studies show that patients can recover better and faster when these guidelines are consistently followed. Washington Regional, proud to be recognized by the American Heart Association for achievement in the Get With The Guidelines and Target Stroke Quality programs. This is just one more way Washington Regional is working to improve health care for you and your family. Learn more at WRegional.com. Our question today is, what would you like to see from Chad Morris in his first year as head coach of the Razorbacks? Very open-ended question. A lot of different responses on Twitter. We've went through a lot of those this morning. I want to go through it again here with our panel. Nick Mason's out in Georgia with the Peach Jam in Augusta, Georgia. Tyler Wilson joining us. Brett Goods here in studio. Guys, let's just kind of go around the room here. What would you like to see from Chad Morris? Nick, I'll start with you. What do you want to see from Coach in his first year as he leads this program? You know, next week's media days, camp's not going to be a few weeks behind that. What do you need to see in year one?
And you brought up earlier that it doesn't matter as long as the wins are there. And I do agree with you on that year one. If you're able to get to 6 wins, to me, I think you throw everything else out the door. I think you throw out the door how you win, who you beat, how you get there. Are you playing good at the end of the season, the beginning of the season? But let's say he does not get to 6 wins. I think then that's when it does matter who you're beating, how you're winning, and what the product on the field looks like. I mean, you know, I just want to see an exciting brand of football. I'm not putting a win total on it. If he happens to get to 6, yeah, I would love that to happen. But I just want to see exciting football. I want to get back to the days. I can remember being in school and being a fan, as all of us can. And I remember every time that Ryan Mallett or Tyler Wilson got on the field, like, I just knew that we were going to score 30, 40, 50 points. And I just knew every time that I'd see them drop back and sling one up in the air, I knew that Joe Adams or Jarius Wright or somebody was going to run right up under it and score a touchdown. It seems like the last couple of years, every time Cole Kelly or Brandon Allen or Austin Allen threw one up in the air, it just was throwing it out of bounds. And so, like, I want to get back to the times to where at the end of the game there are 4 or 5 40 or 50 yard plays that have been made. And I think, you know, I think, because if you're not going to win 6, then you definitely need to play an exciting brand. And I think that's what Mike Anderson has captured just a little bit of, is even whenever he loses or even whenever he just makes it to the tournament, gets out in the first round, you'll still go back and look at it, and he's averaged, you know, the most points in the SEC, top 10 in the country in scoring. So he's playing exciting, so therefore you're able to cope with losses a lot better if you have a good product. The problem is when you're scoring 7 points or 10 points at South Carolina, getting beat by 40-something, and so it's like you're getting blown out and you're not playing an exciting brand of football. So as long as things look like they're trending upwards and I'm having fun as I'm watching the game and points being scored, I can live with him doing anything other than, you know, winning one game in year one.
I agree, and I'm not about the wins or losses. I just want to see energy. I want to see improvement. Obviously, the, you know, improvement on offense, but improvement on defense and special teams. I feel like, you know, over the last couple of years, we have been terrible on special teams, and I think that's cost us. You know, you can't give the field position, let it swing that much. I think after we do get blown out, because we will get blown out in a game or two, I want to see what the energy level is the next week and see how they respond. The coaches and the kids. I want to see how he handles the media. Does he blame the players or does he blame his kids? Because there's going to be those ups and downs. But I think he's a good hire if he continues on the path that he is going, in my opinion. But I want to see that energy and that improvement throughout throughout the course of the season.
You know, I think I agree with both of you, and I think that the biggest thing that I want to see, instead of, I can sit here, quote, wins, I can do all that stuff, I can talk about the energy, but I want 365 days from today to know who the guy that's going to be pulling the trigger, because I've made the statement that I believe the piece, when you're running this offense, the most vital piece is the quarterback position, and the reason we can't and don't know what the win total would be or what the expectation or even know where to start right now is because we don't know who that guy is. But 365 days from today, when we're on this show talking about expectations for 2019 and 2020 and 21, is to know who that guy potentially is for the next three seasons of football. Yeah. And if we got that, I think we've I think at the end of 2018, if we go, there's a lot of I know who the guy's going to be for the next 3 years, I think we all will feel really comfortable about what the future of Chad Morris maybe looks like.
I can't remember if it was the first year or the second year of Petrino, but one of those years, and I know there were some problems in 2012 again, there was a rash of penalties because the team couldn't get lined up, and they had five backs. They didn't have enough men on the line of scrimmage. And there were several big plays that were called back, and there were problems just with simple alignment stuff. Remember that?
Yes.
Yeah. Mistakes that just kept beating yourselves. Mm-hmm. I mean, and these weren't penalties that, like, well, the ref thought it was holding, so he threw a flag, and it was subjective.
It was stupid. Eight men on the line of scrimmage.
It was stupid stuff that you didn't have enough men on the line of scrimmage. You didn't have enough. You had too many men on the stupid stuff that beat yourself. That's what I want to see this year, is a team that it can at least listen. If you get called for holding, at least that's a penalty out of effort and aggression. And you had a penalty where you were making a play, and that was, you know, a penalty of effort. Lining up off sides, not having enough men on the line of scrimmage. You know, you can go, you know, things that you're jumping off sides, things that beat yourselves. I want to see a coaching staff that can, over at least the last 2 months of the season, weed those mistakes out. Because I watched a team in 2012, and I watched a team the first year have those issues, particularly in 12, that just cost this team possessions, that put them behind the chains and made it first and 15 too many times. I want to see if this can be a situation and a system and a staff and a culture that those kind of mistakes aren't going to happen. Can you be a disciplined team? Because when you're in a ball game where it's pretty close to even, the talent's close enough to even that you can win the game, those are the kind of things that are going to cost you in the end. Because you can't be first and 15 very many times and win a ball game. You just can't. So those are specifically the kind of things I'm looking for, you know, and those are going to happen weeks 1, 2, 3, but past weeks 3, 4, and 5, those kind of things, shouldn't happen. I know that, Tyler, they're going to happen in a new offense.
It does.
But it does. But
especially
at some point,
when you go fast, right?
Especially when you go fast, and the faster you do anything in life, the more mistakes you're going to make. But at some point, those kind of mistakes have to go away, and that's what I'm going to be looking for. Things like that.
And when you say that, my mind immediately goes to South Carolina, and it goes to a 22-yard gain on third down against South Carolina, and Colby, and it was Colby Hamilton. We got 6 men on the line of scrimmage because we got our ex receiver. And you know, that goes back to me as the quarterback, but it also goes back to our preparation as a team, right? I mean, it goes back to all those things. You know, you got to be aware of the little intricacies of what creates success. That was a huge play in the early portion of that football game where it was a major gain. And, you know, those things happen consistently. There's no question.
They're momentum killers.
Absolutely.
And you mentioned a big gain that it wipes out. And again, these aren't ones where a ref threw a flag because he thought it was pass interference, and you may or may not agree. It either is or it isn't, you know. And these are things you do to yourself. And you just can't have self-inflicted mistakes. And I understand, hey, week one, week two, week three, they're going to happen, but they got to decline over the first few weeks. You know, training camp, I think, is going to be kind of ugly. I don't know how much we're going to get to watch, how much we're going to get to see. But the first few weeks may be a little rough. But can some of those self-inflicted wounds and some of the things that teams are doing to you to take advantage of you, can you do things to take that away from opponents too? You know, when they're just picking on you and chipping on you. You know, what can you do to alleviate some of those things as the weeks wear on, particularly as you put more of yourself out there on tape? So those are the things I'm going to find interesting about this team and things I expect from Chad Morris and this program, because – right now, I just think that he's got a roster filled to run Bielema's type of offense, Bielema's type of defense, and I think as down as people are on this defense, and some people, and I'm not one of them, down on Chavis, I think this defense may have to carry this team a little bit this year until they can recruit all the players they need to recruit to run the type of offense they need to run. I think it'll get better over time, but I think it's just going to take some time.
Any chance Bielema shocks us and was actually a good recruiter, just a terrible coach?
The numbers don't tell me that that's going to happen.
Well, and I think where the shock could come is that Bielema recruited a few playmakers. Now, I don't think we'll be shocked necessarily by, oh, wow, well, Bielema had 30 guys on this team that all can play. But I do think if you know, there may be a couple more T.J. Hammonds on this team that they did not fit the style of offense that Bielema was trying to run. And I don't know if people quite realize how many kids in all sports go to a situation that does not fit what they're trying to do. And then, you know, you just kind of, they just kind of fall to the side and they never really pan out. So I do think there are a couple of guys that if you can get these guys in space and get them the football, I do think that they can make a few plays and be shocked by that.
You know, there are a lot of guys coming. There was Tyler, there's a very short senior class last year, and there's a lot of guys coming back that have a lot of playing time. Now, can that parlay into better success this year? I don't know.
You know, this is something we've talked about in a roundabout way, but I don't know if we've really got down to it. Bielema had a challenge, and the challenge was he was trying to recruit players, not only just trying to recruit players to get to Arkansas and all the challenges that already maybe exist to recruit and get people to Arkansas, but he's also having to evaluate players that played in different systems than they're playing when they come into his system. And, you know, so a lot of those players, yes, will be going back and reverted back to what they were playing. But sometimes you miss on a guy because you go, man, yeah, that guy – looks like lightning in open space, and he's got, I can only imagine him in my system, and he gets in and you know, you just don't know what to do with him because he didn't acclimate as strong and all those other things, and so you didn't see a guy like T.J. Hammonds out there and I think there's some of that maybe Chad Morris will be able to take advantage of because of you know, the previous experience and maybe a miss. It didn't fit necessarily Bielema's view, but maybe it falls in the wheelhouse of what Chad Morris is trying to do. I'll say this, though. Very few guys, and I think Chad made this statement early, There's a reason why you're going to get some of these JUCO guys that are tall, lanky, can jump and move and are a threat. I don't think we have, and Bielema did a strong job of recruiting the big, tall, physical, athletic receiver that is a crucial point in the red zone area. And I think that's what Chad Morris is really. There might be a couple guys with some speed and some wiggle guys that will acclimate easily to this system. I think what we're missing and what I think Chad Morris will be first to tell you is we've got to get size and we got to get physicality at the wide receiver position along with that speed.
Brought to you by Williams Tractor in Fayetteville and Bobcat of Northwest Arkansas in Rogers. Big Dog Mowers have you covered when it comes to the job, no matter what. With an industry-leading 7-year limited warranty, Big Dog will have you taken care of with prices starting to just $27.99 or 0% financing for 48 months and zero down with approved credit. You can have that perfect lawn that you've always wanted without breaking the bank. Stop in and check it out at Williams Tractor in Fayetteville and Bobcat of Northwest Arkansas and Rogers today.
The Morning Rush podcast is brought to you by Bud Light. Stock up with Bud Light for game days and check out Budweiser's limited edition Freedom Reserve. This red lager is specially brewed for proud veterans across the country. For every case purchased, Budweiser will donate $1 to Fold of Honor, a nonprofit providing scholarships to families of fallen soldiers. Bud Light, please drink responsibly.